This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoling and this is the Breakfast Grill. Mutual risk and profit sharing between parties, the assurance of fairness, and that all transactions are based on an actual underlying business activity or assets. These are the basic principles of Islamic banking practiced by more than 1,500 institutions in 80 countries. Today, we speak to one of them, Al Rajhi Bank Malaysia. Joining us is their CEO, Arsalan Ahmad. Now, for many, they might have seen one of the 16 branches across Malaysia, but may not know it's a wholly owned subsidiary of Saudi Arabia-based Al Rajhi Bank, which is actually the world's largest Islamic lender by assets. But here in this country, you're one of the two small standalone foreign Islamic banks. So why do you set up shop here, and albeit it was in 2006?
Well, firstly, Xiaoling, it's a real pleasure to be with you this morning. It's a great question. Al Rajhi Bank is not only the largest Islamic bank by asset value, but it's also one of the largest banks in the world. It's in the top 20 by market capitalization. I believe it's 15. So why would you be so subscale in Malaysia? And why would you be in Malaysia altogether? Now, as a purely 100% Islamic bank, it doesn't do conventional law. You have to look at the jurisdictions where it can operate something meaningful. And yes, there's a lot of Muslim countries, but being able to operate in a meaningful way, Malaysia is clearly a standout location outside of the GCC, the Gulf Cooperation Council. So strategically, it makes a lot of sense why a purely Islamic bank would be here. So that's the reason that we're here. But I think that your question was indicating, but why so subscale if you're so big? And I think that really the answer to that question is strategy, approach to market. And look, there's been approaches to the market that people have tested and no one knew. There hadn't been these standalone foreign Islamic banks before. So people have tried different things and they've had mixed results. But it is fair to say, because the numbers are out there, the results put you down as kind of some of the smaller pieces. So that's what I would say. Testing strategies, they haven't necessarily worked as well. And that's the reason that that they are like that. Of course, the leverage banks, i.e. the banks that have an Islamic banking subsidiary, suddenly come with a great advantage when they start their standalone business because they can leverage a much larger institution with a much larger footprint on day one. And that's obviously a massive competitive advantage in the days of bricks and mortar.
If I drill down on this, right, there are 16 Islamic banks, like I say, here in Malaysia, five are foreign owned. In fact, when I look at the data, Islamic banks under the eight local banks already count for more than 76% of domestic Islamic financing markets. This is according to S&P Global Ratings. So what is Al Rajhi Bank's proposition in this, I would already say, rather crowded Malaysian market? How do you differentiate yourself from the competition?
So I'll define that in terms of historically some of the things that we've done. And I'll also define that in terms of things that I think that we'll be able to excel in the future. So let me break this into those two parts. So talking about the past. Now, certainly an area where we have been successful is that corridor between Malaysia and Saudi Arabia. Yes, that's largely been a retail pilgrimage connection. And that's something we've been able to do well. The other area that we've done very well, and our numbers show that, is in corporate, but really that's in the SME space. And again, it's more kind of the middle market space. What we've been able to do is just have great customer service. So because we have a select group of customers, we can just service them really well. And that's really been the story of our, the successes we've had in the past have come from that. But the question is like, okay, that's great. But listen, surely other people can build corridors. It'd be a bit more difficult in the Saudi corridor, but is that a sustainable long-term strategy, right?
And everyone can offer good service.
Well, they can offer, and the second part is anyone can offer good service. And, you know, when you talk about pilgrimage, how often do people go? Is that a sustainable? And you'd be right to provide that challenge. What can we leverage to do better? Now, the one thing Al Rajhi Bank is in Saudi Arabia is a dominant player that is not just good in the products and propositions it has, but also in the digital space. For example, just, you know, last year they launched a payments company called Neobee. This year, you would have seen news that they actually acquired a tech company. But that's not something that they're doing that's new. That's in the DNA. what they've been doing in terms of robotics and other things and so on, so within the banking sector. So when we talk about technology and digital, that's an area that we certainly can excel in.
I'm also curious, because you're a Saudi Arabian bank by jurisdiction, do you have a different definition of Sharia banking versus what is currently practiced here in Malaysia? So does that mean that your products are very different, or even the way you calculate your profit sharing, does it differ very differently?
So in terms of Sharia standards, it is fair to say that the Middle East and Malaysia and other jurisdictions are different. And across the globe, there is no standardization. And certainly what we do is ensure that we have high Sharia standards, because that's expected of an Islam and important to many customers. Customers that are Muslim, and also for, and in my experience, I've been an Islamic banker my whole life, also to non-Muslims from an ethical point of view. So yes, we maintain a high Sharia standard. Yes, we leverage from best practice that we see when it comes to what we see in, say, the GCC that we think should be adopted. So yes, we do that. But at the same time, Malaysia has a very robust arrangement in terms of accommodation of Sharia standards and how things are adopted here. And we also adopt those practices too. So what I would say is that we get to have the best of both worlds, especially when people are worrying, you know, is this substance over form type of thing? So that's certainly there. However, we do make sure that what we offer, you know, is competitive from a service and general proposition point of view. So that's obviously a driving factor on how we structure our solutions.
So I want to talk a little bit about this competition or competitiveness, which you highlighted. With 16 Islamic banks offering similar product, commentators have said that there's little product differentiation and it's all down to price competitiveness because customers are very sensitive about that. And you only have 16 branches. Your asset size is tiny compared to, let's say, Bank Islam, which is the largest standalone. Your asset size, 8.6 billion ringgit. Their asset size, 75 billion ringgit with 150 branches. And we know scale counts in banks. So does that work against you even in terms of your ability to price more competitively?
Last year, we literally launched the lowest pricing in home financing anywhere in the market. And at the same time, the most competitive profit rate that you'd get on current accounts at the same time. So the idea that you can't price things competitively, even if you're small, is not necessarily true. The levers that people have in terms of raising their funding, yes, there can be some differential, especially when someone has sloshy zero, you know, profit or interest liabilities. If someone's got loads of those, they're going to be super competitive. But what you think, people have sloshy liabilities are going to sit there and say, oh, I'm just going to leave it there for nothing. No, they're demanding of what their deposits get them. You'd be surprised how close it is because customers are not willing to put their money and it not working. There is an area where the larger scale banks will be more competitive. Generally speaking, that is true. But when you get into the detail, there is no reason for a bank, even depending on its size, focuses its strategy to be competitive on pricing.
What about cost? Because I did see that in your notes of the third quarter, that cost optimization is one of your key initiatives. With 16 branches, I'll go back to that again. Your fixed costs or your cost income ratio, I assume, is not the lowest in town. Can you give us some guidance in terms of that number and what you're heading towards?
Yeah, so I mean, I can give you the published numbers for the 2020, because I'll tell you what I'm going to do. So I'm going to go into what the worst of it was. So you know, just to have the opening. It was 98.9% cost income ratio, right? Now, that's certainly not the case. That's trended down since in our September numbers to 80-something. So that's where our cost income ratio was.
Which is very high.
It's extremely high.
Yeah, the lowest in town is Public Bank at, I think, in the high 30s, mid-30s. Most banks are at 50%.
Right.
So is your target going towards that?
So, yeah, so in fact, the market is around a 50 to 55%. We think we'll be better than that over the next 5 years. But that's a question not just about cost optimization. And there is, but it's also very importantly about your revenue. To operate a bank, there's a certain base cost that you have to have. You know, I like to give the example of an audit department. It doesn't matter if you've got one customer or 10,000 customers, you're going to need an audit department. as an example. So there's a natural cost base. So one is to optimize that cost base, but then really focus on the revenue growth.
The cost is the one thing you can control. Revenue, a little bit more challenging, right? Because it also depends on the operating environment. And since we're on that topic, let's talk about the operating environment. I think there's no point denying that the last 2 years have been very challenging for all banks. All have had to suffer some form of modification loss from the loan moratoriums, barely any loans growth, while the rapid cut to the overnight policy rate would have caused margins to shrink, especially since loans take a while to reprice. But I do note that from third quarter, core net profit was $8.6 million for the bank compared to a loss of $63 million in the previous year. So help us understand, is truly the worst over for the bank? What kind of growth are you expecting in 2022?
Will this year be better than last year? The consensus is it will be, in that there is an expectation that things will relax for business to carry on. There is no view that there will be another moratorium. And obviously, as you rightly said, that's an impact of modification loss. It seems to be, if we look at global factors in terms of rates, the rates environment, it seems to be that rates increase. And we know that banks benefit when rates increase, as you've alluded to as well. So all of those combinations, when you're more nimble, there's no reason why this year should not be better than last year. Generally, market sentiment is, from the banks and also from customers that we engage with, is more positive than last year.
But in a nutshell, pretty much the same ratio. So corporate finance around 75% of loan book and the balance households, would that change significantly in the next 1 year?
I think in terms of proportions, it would probably be about the same if we're talking about 1 year. If we're talking about
a 5 year
numbers, where we hope to be in 5 years' time is a basically balance between retail, SME and corporate around a third each.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we are speaking to Arslan Ahmad, Chief Executive Officer of Al Rajhi Bank Malaysia. When we come back, it's an M&A on the cards. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. On the hot seat is Arslan Ahmad, Chief Executive Officer of Al Rajhi Bank Malaysia. Before the break, it's the worst over for them. But I have a question. Are the tough times just beginning, though, because the last of the moratoriums expires this year? In fact, I think around now. And even Bank Negara has warned that overall impairment is projected to rise above 4% of loans driven by businesses, actually. Are you expecting any asset quality deterioration in your books?
Look, everyone's going to see an asset quality deterioration in their books because of the moratorium ending. But I don't think that ours would be significant simply because of the closeness. We have a select group. We're talking about corporate, which you just mentioned in the intro. We have extremely close relationship with our customers. We work with them, you know, on a kind of daily, weekly basis. So because of that, we have a firm understanding of where their businesses are. And there's comfort there.
Okay.
The retail book, obviously on the retail book, you know, retail is one of those where you're just going out to a large group of people of different, and you know, there's a limited amount of closeness you can have in those areas. It's a mass offering. And naturally, there's going to be people, guess what, who took the moratorium because they can't pay. The moratoriums end and they still can't pay. So there'll be a deterioration, but every bank will have that. In our estimation, it's not going to be anything outside of any risk appetite or make a material impact to us.
So you're comfortable with the level of provisioning that you've done. And based on the numbers of third quarter numbers, correct me if I'm wrong, the non-performing loan figure is only going to be about 1.4%. Do you see that changing significantly in the coming quarters?
Not significantly.
Okay. And you know, the last 2 years was a story of ultra low rates. But this year, it's the year of global monetary tightening. It's synchronized, in fact, with even consensus expecting Bank Negara to raise rates by 50 bips before the year is over. Do you think that's the case? And has the bank also repriced its loan book to actually take advantage of this rising interest rate environment?
So I'll take the last bit first. When we talk about repricing loan books, typically the floating rate facilities, there's a pass-through that needs to be done immediately liability side, and obviously the assets naturally occur at the next reset. So that's how it will happen. We don't preempt a rise. That's not how we operate. It's not how our contracts operate.
Mm.
In terms of overall rising rate environment, in terms of Do we think there will be an increase? Yes, I think there will be an increase. The question, you know, the question is it 25 or 50? And I think that that's a question that people need to. There'll be a lot of debate over the year, I'm sure, a lot of opinion, but I don't think anyone should, you know, beat around the bush. Mm. There'll be a rate increase this year.
Yeah.
And I think it's uncontroversial to say. The question is whether it's 25 or 50 across the rest of the year.
The other thing I noticed is that maybe this is not the right term, because in conventional term, banking terms, is CASA funding, right? What's your CASA funding like? Because that's always a cheap source of funding. And in a rising interest rate environment, that works to your advantage. But when I see your books in your third quarter, deposit from customers is only 6 billion. Is there going to be a shift towards encouraging more of this?
Yeah, so let's break down CASA. So I think it's really important. When you've got CASA from corporate customers, you think they're leaving it for nothing? No. So when people talk about CASA, they're talking about retail customers. Increasingly, retail customers are becoming more savvy, but it is correct that CASA from retail customers and growing that base is incredibly important for a bank. And it is true that we need to do better. And that's why, even outside of our digital banking proposition, we introduced eKYC last year to help with that. But look, even if you increase, introduce KYC, you've got to have good products and propositions. And that's why, even on our CASA, we offer a really good and high rate. Mm. People may say, well, then but how does that help if you're offering a higher rate and, you know, is that the same as term deposit? The way that I look at it is that that's where customers are trending to. They just expect rates on their current account and not have it locked up in a term deposit. So, in answer to your question, we are focused on more CASA. Does that necessarily drive down radically your cost of funding in the environment of expectation across corporate and retail customers? Not as much as it did in the past, but you are correct to note that that's an important area that we want to focus on to enable it. As mentioned, on the kind of existing experience people will have, we have eKYC in place, and the digital bank proposition is, you know, centered and focused on the ease of opening an account.
What kind of loan growth expectations are you having for this year? RAM, as the rating agency Malaysia, has forecast 4% for the entire banking sector. But what is your own house view? Will you get 4%? Yeah, I mean, will you do better than the industry?
Oh, double digits.
Double digits, okay. The other thing I noticed from the accounts is the core capital ratio, or CET1, for our Rajiv Bank is 10.1% as at September 2021. Now, it's been on a declining trend. In December 2020, it was 11.6. And of course, a higher number is preferred here for CET1. Bank Islam, 14.8%. Yep. So are you planning to raise any capital to raise this figure? Or are you comfortable where you are?
Yeah, that's okay. I'm happy to take you through that. You know, in terms of the fact that we're above the regulatory requirements and stress testing and all that type of stuff,
yes.
So we're all fine from that perspective. But we're trying to grow the business. And I'll just mention that I'm quite, you know, straightforwardly, double-digit growth in assets. Well, that's got to have some capital against
it. So, because you need the capital to lend out in the first place.
Absolutely. So, we already have a commitment from our shareholder for core equity, tier one and tier two across this year. And some of it we've already taken. So the benefit of having, you know, one of the largest banks in the world as your parent is, you know, it's a strong bank. I think that's the term they use, strong. So, we've had that commitment provided for this year. And that's not just it's coming, because there is more coming. It's already in. We, of course, only draw that down when we need to, and that's just from an efficiency point of view. But, yeah, that's already committed.
What has been talked a lot about in the Islamic banking space is, of course, mergers and acquisitions. And Al Rajiv was in merger discussions with MIDF that was called off. But if another deal was on the table, would you consider it?
So the way that I would answer that is just be transparent as to what our strategy is right now. Okay, so our strategy is very clear, that we want to be the number one Islamic finance innovation bank. Us, not by acquiring someone, we're going to do it.
So organically.
We're going to transform our business and do that. And we believe that this is the absolute right time to do it, where we don't have the historic issue of the past. How much bricks and mortar do you have, and how much do we need to have in order to compete? I think it's different. I think that what we've got is, across the world, I would say, a banking industry that's in gridlock on how to adopt the new channel, which is digital. At the same time, we've got a load of entrants coming in that think they can own, that they can do it as long as they're digital enough. Mm. And we have an enabling environment within Malaysia. What we're talking about is the adoption of use of alternative channels such as the internet. I know it's not alternative, but I mean to do transactions and so on and so forth. A regulatory environment and also technology availability is the perfect time to do it. And because we've moved, I think, the earliest in the industry, whether conventional and Islamic, in the scale of what we're doing in terms of transformation, I think for that reason, we're a first mover. We're no longer walking into how many hundreds of branches do we have to compete with. And that's what we are doing. That's what we are focused on in our strategy. So when we talk about, is there a merger and acquisition on the table? No.
But would you consider it, though? For example, the latest deal, of course, was Citibank selling their consumer assets in this region. Yeah, you might want to grow organically, but if there was a good deal on the table, would you not look at it? Yeah, doesn't it make sense to have a larger banking franchise? It goes back to this whole concept of scale and lower costs, doesn't it?
I think that if there is a deal on the table that's good, anybody would look at it. So I put it in that perspective. Are we actively searching for it? No.
There were media reports about a merger between Kuwait Finance House, which is the other standalone Islamic bank. Doesn't that kind of make sense, actually?
No. I don't know where this rumour comes from. Like, do you know, like you hear it with some of the others. There's two other prominent banks. I'm going back to older training where we don't name them. Esteemed, and both CEOs I love dearly as brothers. And that their banks are always... they're bound to merge. And I always look at it and say, why would that make any sense? No, look, I think that...
Maybe you shouldn't have lunch with the bosses then.
It wouldn't have been that. But I do think that it makes sense how people are saying, as you say, there's 16 banks. There's a bunch of them subscale. Surely they should combine powers and try and do something.
Yes.
And I just don't... as a concept generally, and I don't want to name names of other institutions, I just don't think that's a good approach generally. I don't.
On that note, thank you for your time. On The Breakfast Grill was Aslan Ahmad, Chief Executive Officer of Al Rajhi Bank Malaysia. I'm Wong Shao Ning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.